Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Back in our more socially ambitious years, Christian and I would go to Vegas a lot. Vegas, baby. We were at an opening of some Cirque du Soleil show. They were having some like after-party thing that we just went to because we were like, we got to show up to this thing and we're supposed to meet Neil Patrick Harris upstairs. So we said to the bouncer, and this just sounded arrogant, but we thought we were on a list and we weren't. Do you mind if we just run up? We have to tell our friend. And we were like, name drop Neil's. We have to tell our friend Neil Patrick Harris just that we came and we couldn't get in. So as Christian and I are waiting off to the side, at one point there was a huge stream of people, like a parade of like girls and miniskirts and like kind of douchey looking guys and like tight shirts and stuff. And leading this group was Carrot Top, and the bouncer was like, oh, right this way, Carrot, and all his friends were going in, and I'm looking at him, Carrot Top, and he sees me, and he comes over, and he quickly assesses the situation, sees that we can't get into this club, and he goes, hey, man, you want to come be in my entourage, in my group? So Carrot Top tried to get us into this club.
So later on in the night, Justin was like, kind of to himself almost, he was like, I can't believe Carrot Top tried to get us into a club tonight. Like, that's such a crazy story. And I was like, what do you mean Carrot Top tried to get us into a club? Said, when did that happen?
I said, that guy that came over when we were waiting. That
I was like, that was Carrot Top? Justin was like, who do you think it was?
Yeah.
Who looks like Carrot Top?
Who looks like Carrot Top? And I kept referring to him as Carrot.
To this day, I'm not convinced.
Definitely was.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Do 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 shaboom. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long. And with me, as always, is my non-ginger, non-magician talent, magically inclined.
Ripped.
Christian, my brother.
Non-prop comedian.
Oh, yeah, he's a prop comedian.
Isn't he? Or maybe, is that insulting?
No.
He is a prop comic, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is.
Or am I getting him confused with Gallagher?
Gallagher, I think, specifically smashes things.
No, I think Gallagher, that's insulting to Gallagher. Oh, I think Gallagher does a lot of shit.
To all the Gallagher.
I'm not saying he smashes a lot of shit. I think he uses a lot of props. I think that's his thing.
All the Gallagher nerds. he does. But his famous bit is smashing a watermelon. That's what he's like.
That's true. That's famous. But it's like you'd say about Jim Gaffigan. His famous bit is the Hot Pockets thing. But he does a lot more than that. Anyway, Carrot Top. He was actually.
He was really nice.
Really nice. I just thought he was a really nice stranger. I didn't know he was Carrot Top.
I don't know how you don't recognize that face.
Well, you know, in my defense, I think Carrot Top, from when we were kids, has gone through such a physical metamorphosis that I just
what
didn't.
What do you mean?
I hadn't been accustomed.
Save it for the Carrot Top.
It would be great to have
it
Carrot
would.
Top.
Oh my God.
I think my brain hadn't caught up to the new reality of Carrot Top. So I still pictured him as a kind of like a scrawny, like big, you know, red hair. But he looks so different now.
Yeah, that's right. When we were kids, he was like a scrawny. Yes. He was Carrot Top.
He was like Sideshow Bob or something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now he got really ripped. I would love to talk to him, actually. And you know when you make fun of me for my eyebrows, like spazzing? Yeah. I think his eyebrows always kind of look like that.
Yeah. Now.
Yeah. Like evil. He's like an evil. He has like a
evil face, but couldn't have been nicer.
No, yeah, I know. I was very thankful. It was also just funny that like Carrot Top tried to get us.
It's
into a club.
It's a funny soundbite.
Yes.
Remember that time that Carrot Top got us into a club?
No. Tried to get us. Wait, I had the intention of getting us
with
into
this
a
whole
club.
Entourage. Speaking of entourage,
yes.
Ready for this segue?
Oh yeah.
I'm glad you're sitting down for this. Our guest today is not Carrot Top. It is someone who was on a very famous show called Entourage, and she was the female face, I would say, of that show.
Yeah.
That I would even call it an iconic show.
Yeah.
Entourage.
Yes.
Yeah. Our guest today is the wonderful, kind.
So kind. God.
Emmanuel Shrieky.
Warm. She's many things. She's many good things. She is, I haven't seen any bad things. She's not the, as far as I know, only good thing. We talked about if there are any bad things, and you know, she certainly didn't reveal any, as you're about to find out. But Entourage is a show that was on for many years on HBO, and it's something that I just recently started rewatching because I worked with the director, one of the guy who directed most of the episodes of the first season and second season, Julian Farrino. A little plug from a new Netflix show, but he directed this Netflix BBC series that I'm in that's coming out this fall called Jiri Hadji. One of the nicest people I've ever worked for, one of the kindest directors, sensitive and really good, really great director. And he did most of those Entourage episodes. I think it was before Emmanuel came on. I think her character came on in the second or third season, but she was on for many years. Emmanuel and I have worked together a number of times, and she's just one of my favorite people.
You got to know her very well doing a movie called, originally called Patriotville, that got...
Yes.
They got changed to called Taking Chances. Uh-huh. They changed the title to from Patriotville to Taking Chances, which I think is, if this is possible, an even dumber movie title than literally right before Aaron, which I make fun of on every single podcast. But the title Taking Chances is, yeah. Does it get dumber than that?
No, we talked about this a lot. Christian likes to say it's the most, it's hard to imagine a more generic title. And we try to sometimes, like things happened.
Characters interact.
Yeah. different people who know each other.
Learning lessons.
Yeah, learning lessons. Well, there are some that exist. Most of them exist. Most titles exist.
Yeah, dumb. But also Patriotville is kind of a cool title, I think.
Well,
Taking Chances is not a perfect title for any movie because it doesn't say anything specific.
No, but see, that's what they wanted. That's what happens when
don't get
somebody
me started. I know. Hate the title.
When a company then takes over a little fun product like that, like Patriotville was. It was made in the spirit of like real indie movie making, and it was a sweet little movie. And then it got bought, and of course the people who bought it want to make money, and so they want to package it a certain way. So they packaged it to be like this very generic, appeals to as many people as possible.
Well, then they picked the perfect title.
Yeah, Taking Chance. And the perfect, if you see, we'll post a photo of the cover because it's funny. It's very, and they photoshopped little playing cards in my hands. And I have this like befuddled look on my face.
God,
it's really embarrassing.
And offensive.
And they made Emmanuel wear this like little mini skirt and like this like little sexy, I mean.
It's better her wearing it than you, I guess.
Well, I would have preferred, yeah.
But it was great to see her. I hadn't seen her in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And she's just had such good energy. She really does have great energy.
You can feel it just listening to it.
Yeah. It was fun to see her. And I know it was fun for you to catch up with her. So
you won't get this from the interview, but
we'll talk about that.
Okay.
It was really great to see her. I know you had a good time talking to her, catching up with her.
I really did.
And I hope all of you enjoy maybe hearing from her for the first time or again if it's been a while. So this is it, the conversation that Justin had with Emmanuel Shrieky.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
You are easily the best person that I know in terms of making a space your own and like comfortable.
You would know.
Yeah, I would know. So Em and I did a movie called, which everyone probably knows. I'm laughing because nobody saw it. It was called Patriotville at the time. And it was about a plucky.
But then it changed the name, right?
Yeah. So they changed it. It was about a man boy who who is really into the history of his small town. And you were like a grifter. You lived there.
I lived there. I was some offbeat.
You're quirky, offbeat, yeah, eccentric. We had like a romance in it, but it was, and you helped me kind of like save this. I can't believe people didn't see it. You helped me save this, whatever. The battle had taken place on this land and you helped me restore it.
By the way, can we just say that that was one of the greatest experiences?
Well, that's the thing about these movies that I'm like making light of the movie because nobody saw it and it wasn't a great movie, but it was so fucking fun.
It was so Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Yeah, so we were in Rock Hill and that was closest to Charlotte. We flew into Charlotte, North Carolina, and it was just over the border in South Carolina. And we got to know a lot of there was a college there. We got to know a lot of the kids. We went back and partied on porches.
Especially you.
Yeah. I shouldn't say we. You were very responsible. But we would party in these. In fact, we had a friend, Christine, wardrobe supervisor on it.
Yeah.
Remember Christine?
I do.
But anyway, Christine was of Asian descent. But she was from like Encino, you know, she was like totally,
she
was a California girl. And we had been hanging out with these local college guys, these like bros, and they were totally nice, you know, and they said, one night Christine wasn't with us. She was part of our little like group and she just hadn't happened to not be there. And one of these guys goes, hey man, where's that Chinese gal? And I was like, well, what? He goes, you know, that Chinese gal you're always hanging out with. And I swear to God, I didn't know who she was talking about. I said, he goes, you know, and then he described her a little bit like you would describe, you know, she's wearing that camo jacket. And I said, oh, Christine. And I said, yeah, oh, Christine's not Chinese. She's from, and he goes, whatever. You know, that Asian broad.
But Jay, this is like, I think it was the same night and you were out with these people and you ended up going to like some really nice house somewhere. Uh-huh. And then I'll never forget this. I've told this story so many times. And then you said, wow, this is a really nice house. Who lives here? And one of the college students was like, well, I don't know, like some Jew.
Oh, yeah. Now, we should also clarify that many of the people we met down there were not anti-Semitic or racist.
No,
Yeah. We just happened to hang out with the ones. Yeah, that's true. But he said it so, again, the same way the guy said the Chinese thing. Right. He said it so matter-of-factly, like, I'm just some Jew. He didn't couch it with any, like, embarrassment or, like, as a Jew. You know, it was like, I'm just some Jew. Just, like, proudly. But that was, we also, I mean, I'm not proud of this, but again, I've grown. I'm older. I don't really like to stay out anymore. That's
sign
the truth.
That we're older.
Yeah, I can't. But we'd go out so late that the DP, the director of photography, came to us at one point. And this, keep in mind, this is the guy that shot all of Larry Clark's movies. So he shot Kids and Bully. And like, and he came to us and he goes, guys, I'm having a hard time lighting. You have to maybe take it easy. You got to chill out. Because we were just awful. Like, we looked like zombies.
We were crazy. Do you remember our trip to?
Yeah. Isle of Palms. Yeah, so it's right off the coast of South Carolina. It's beautiful. It's by the way, that whole coast
is
stunning.
Stunning.
Yeah. We were there with a friend. Because the funny part to me of that trip is that Em and I were we were smoking weed. Is that such a thing? And I can cut out anything you want. We were smoking weed and we were pretty stoned, but it was and we were right on the ocean and the waves.
Oh,
the sun.
Amazing.
It was such a great place to just be stoned and kind of like check in with your surroundings. And our friend who we were with, who shall remain nameless, decided his drug of choice. Their drug of choice was cocaine. So it was such a crazy juxtaposition. It was like, Em and I were just like, chill.
What is happening right now?
And he'd come in and be like, you guys, oh my God, the waves are fucking crazy, right? Holy shit. It was just such different energies. How do you do that when you travel? Like, how do you move your... Because we were in a Holiday Inn. It was a fairly modest little hotel.
Yeah.
How did you do that? I've always wondered that. I'd walk into your room and it was like an oasis.
An oasis at the, what was it called? Holiday Inn.
I think it was a Holiday Inn.
That's a song. Yeah. Oasis at the Holiday Inn.
Oasis.
You know what, babe? It's so simple. I think like the idea that, you know, we go into these super generic spaces where there's been like a million people and you know me, I'm like super sensitive to energy. So I'm like, I need to clear this space and I need to make it my own. And it's so, you know, some incense, some music, some candles.
And it's because you think that's what's at the heart of it, because of the people, the existence, the lives that had been lived in there.
Maybe I think a certain amount for sure. Yeah. And I think that when, you know you're going to go and be somewhere for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
It's like you just bring the little comforts that make you feel good so that when you walk in, you're like, oh.
I always forget about that. If I have friends over, I've had people who've stayed in my places, and I always get a little squeamish about them. Like, I know they're probably, they might fuck on my bed. You know, and I think like, I'm a germaphobe. But then for some reason, when I stay at hotels, I don't often consider the amount of fucking. And like, not like good, sensual, like Zalman King fucking, you know, not like 9.5 weeks. It's like, not that that's good. I don't want people dripping food on each other.
Amazing.
But like awful, like, you know. Yeah. Anyway, we won't dwell on that. But so the movie we did was called Patriotville originally, and it was a sweet little whatever. But
renamed Taking Chances.
Yes. So they renamed it to Taking.
In case anybody wants to.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even know where to find it to tune in. They play it on HBO. They're doing a revival of it. They're doing a limited release. But Taking Chances, Christian and I laugh about it because we think it's the most generic. It's hard to think of a more generic title for a movie than Taking Chances.
Yeah.
We thought of a few. Things Happen. The Plot Unfolds. What's Around the Corner? You know, it's just so like, yeah, that's good. That could describe any movie.
But I mean, that was the thing, is that initially we had this such a cute, quirky, like true spirited indie film.
It was. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it really was.
Talmadge, who directed it, really cared about it. He had the story.
Much. And then it was like they wanted to commercialize it.
Well, they repackaged it. I remember because it had taken
that
a while.
Awful cover. Yes.
So Am and I showed up for a photo shoot, and we were like, "Oh, cool! Some distributor bought it. They're going to release it, and now we're going to like do a photo shoot for a cover." And we showed up, and what were you wearing? In the movie, you really do play this like quirky kind of like oddball parrot girl. And I played a guy who was obsessed with history. So my wardrobe when I showed up was like a leather jacket and like tight, those jeans that had like fake fading on them and like gross. Like, and you were wearing it looked great, but like not the character
at all. Yeah. No, I know. And I remember too at that photo shoot, you were like, you refused to do one of these poses.
Oh, right. So we were laughing about like what poses they wanted us to do. And at one point I jokingly was like, oh, do you want us to do the old back to back? Like, oh, what about this guy? As a joke. And she goes, in fact, she goes, yes, that's actually the one that they specifically requested. And we were like, oh, fuck.
We're fucked.
But, and they did. They repackaged it and they photoshopped and whatever. But you had just done, when they marketed it, I had done He's Just Not That Into You, and you had done Zohan. You don't mess with the Zohan. So I think they were trying to make it just like a rom-com.
Capitalize.
Yeah. On our huge successes. You were born in Montreal, but raised in Toronto. Mm-hmm. At what point did you go to Toronto? Do you have memories of Montreal?
I do. Well, because I spent so much time there. My sister still lives there. So growing up, I went there, but I left when I was 2.
So she still lives there, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. And you're fluent in
French.
And you've worked in French in that capacity.
I did.
Right?
Yeah. I did a French film about 5 years ago, a romantic comedy. Translated, it was called
Taking Chances.
It was called Love Situation. It's complicated. That's the translated thing.
Well, that might be a more generic title than Taking Chances.
Yeah, it might be. But you know what? Can I just say that was one of my highlight experiences. Like, if somebody says to me,
if you go back in time right now.
Paris, 5 years ago.
Really?
Yes.
What about it?
God, it was amazing.
I mean, besides being in Paris.
I mean, it was being in Paris. It was living in the Marais for 2.5 months in this beautiful apartment. It was shooting in French, working with Europeans.
You weren't intimidated because you don't speak the language off. You probably were maybe a little rusty.
I totally was. But by the end, it was like rediscovering a very, very real part of who I am.
Yeah.
Like, it was like the suddenly I was just this French girl. Like, I was like, oh, but this is so familiar to me. It's so deep.
Because your parents both spoke it. Yeah.
At home.
Yeah.
You know, and I resisted speaking it growing up. And so learning the part, it was terrifying, you know, because all the things of like, you know, you read a script, you break down a script. In English, we don't think about it. In French, I'm just like, oh my God, what? This is so daunting.
And all the other actors, I'm guessing, were French.
Totally. But I was so well taken care of and I was so supported. And literally, like, by the end, I felt like a little French girl.
Yeah, yeah.
It was epic.
Well, I wonder if, too, psychologically, it tied you back, you know, it brought you back to a time when you were with your parents. Yeah.
Justin, that was such a part of the emotional experience for me. Like, it was just like, wow. Like, that's what I mean. Like, this is absolutely a big part of who I am.
Yeah. And I'm guessing you had a really, like, lovely childhood. You're such a love. I mean, I say that only because you're such a warm, kind person. I'm guessing that came from somewhere, and you know, I don't imagine you overcame much, but I know you went through a lot of tragedy. What was your upbringing like? What was your childhood like?
I mean, you know, I had a great childhood.
Maybe I got it wrong.
No,
assumption.
You didn't get it wrong. I think I had a great childhood. It wasn't a perfect childhood. Mm. I think, you know, and loosely, you know, I dealt, as you know, I lost both of my parents, but I lost my mom when, like,
you were 16.
Quite young.
Yeah.
And she was young. She was only 48 years old.
God.
Like, that's so fucking nuts.
God, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, especially now that we're approaching that.
Yes.
I mean, it must hit you even.
It does.
Harder. Because I don't know about you, but I don't feel, I remember when back then I would hear 48 and like, that sounds kind of old.
Yeah.
But now it's.
Now you're like, wait, that's so
it's
young.
Right around the corner. I know.
Yeah. So the sort of answer to your question is that, yes, my childhood was amazing. I think my mom, you know, I think we talked about this a long time ago. My mom was, there was a lot of anxiety at home and she had quite a temper. So it was really, it was jarring because she was the one who gave so much love and she was also the one who instilled a lot of.
There were conditions though, huh?
So many.
Yeah.
So many. And then add on top of that, you know, a pretty traditional Jewish home.
They were Orthodox?
Modern Orthodox. You know, kosher at home, Shabbat, like the high holidays, which now I'm like, thank God I had that because it's such a gift.
Yeah. So it's something that you've continued, a tradition that you've continued.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in a way, really to honor them.
Yeah.
Like it's a way to just sort of celebrate what I grew up with.
So was your dad more of a grounding force? Was he more of a kind of calming force for your mom and for you?
Well, I wish that were the case.
Yeah.
Daddy was, I mean, he wouldn't hurt a fly. He was the softest, most gentle, funny. He was known for his smile, for his laughter, for his jokes, for his like easy way. But, you know, sadly that didn't always translate at home. But yes, did I have a happy childhood? Yes. I grew up in Canada. I never wanted for anything.
You started acting at a fairly early age, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you were a kid, you were a child actor.
Yeah.
And was that after your mom passed away?
Yeah, exactly. But I did theater since I was 7.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh.
Do you miss doing theater?
I had stage fright.
Oh, no.
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I have stage fright pretty intensely.
Really?
But yes, I do miss theater.
Well, what happens to you? Panic attacks and stuff?
I do. I get so anxious and I ask myself, what the fuck am I doing this?
I know. It's fine. I have a version of that. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But then,
I think everyone kind of
I think so, except that some people can get through it a lot easier. Like, I just have that awful actor's nightmare of like, what happens if I forget everything?
I know. Oh, it's the worst.
And sometimes it like, but when I'm on stage, I'm like, oh, but wait, this is the greatest thing ever.
I know.
So I feel like I'll do it again at the right time. I asked the right thing.
Neil Patrick Harris was on, and I asked him, what's going through your head before? Because he had alluded to having, you know, he gets anxiety. And
yeah.
So before you host the Oscars, like, what is in your head? Like, what are you just freaking out? Your stomach hurts? I'm kind of like projecting all the things that I would be feeling. And he was like, no, I'm pretty good to go. he said it happens earlier than that, but right before he goes on stage, I still get it. I just did a play in New York, and I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Really? Myself?
Yeah. But then as soon as the curtain goes up, it's weird. Something happens.
Magic.
Yeah.
Well, do you struggle with anxiety?
Yes. Yeah. I was talking about this yesterday. Once it didn't go away when the curtain came up, and it was because I'm going to sound like such a lush. This is also, guys, I'm not like this anymore, but this is like 8 years ago. It was Broadway too. And I had gone out the night before because I thought, oh, we're on, it's on its feet now. We're into shows now. I can like go out and have a drink. I drank too much. And the next night we didn't have a matinee. So I thought, oh, I have all day to recover. And around 7 o'clock, I was still hungover, and I started feeling I was still kind of queasy. Yeah, we were on stage, and the curtain was about to go up. And there's a protocol: if you're not feeling well or something's wrong, you have to say to the stage manager, "You got to hold the curtain." Something, you know, and then you get to go to the bathroom or like get a stand-in to do it. So I was, I said to the stage manager, "I can't do it. I think I'm going to throw up. Something's wrong." And he was like, "We already made the announcement. I'm so sorry." And so I was stuck. I was stuck on stage.
Oh, my God. I just got the chills.
Oh, it was horrible. And I start, now I'm panicking. Curtain's going up. Now I'm just thinking, and I have so many lines in this first scene. I have so much to do in the scene. And it's Jeff Goldblum's, our teacher, and it's about all these other great actors on stage. And I'm like, oh, fuck. I have to figure out when I'm going to run off stage to puke.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm trying to figure out, okay, when do I have a few lines off so I can go throw up, come back.
God.
And it was awful. It was the worst. And I couldn't, I was like, oh, I can't remember any lines. I'm just trying to figure out when I'm going to puke. Then the lines would just kind of come out of my mouth.
Right.
And I was like, oh, thank God. Thank God that happened. But
wow.
Now I don't remember the next one. But then the next one would come out.
Yeah.
And it went like that throughout the whole first scene. And after that scene, I was okay. And at the end of the play, I was so grateful to have gotten through it. And I said to somebody in the cast, I was like, I think I must have looked odd at the end. I was like, kind of maybe even like emotional, like teary. And they said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, my friend Zoe, I said, did you notice anything weird about that performance? Because I got to tell you, I was like not myself. And she goes, no, you seem fine. Except for that first scene, you were like gray and sweating bullets. You were just really gray and sweaty. Yeah, I get it. It's awful. It's terrible. And with film, you never experience that. You never feel, have there been moments where you're with Adam Sandler or some big deal where you're like,
oh. God, oh, you know what, babe? It's so crazy that you should ask this question. I don't know that in that way. No. Like, I think, you know, for example, working with Adam, there was one day that I was on set and it was Adam Sandler, John Turturro.
Oh, he's so
Kevin
funny in it
Nealon,
too.
And Rob Schneider.
Uh-huh.
And myself. And I was like, what did I do to deserve this?
Yeah, oh, you feel lucky.
Yeah, I felt so lucky.
Yeah.
And supported. I think that's such a huge thing. I think when you feel supported, you do your best work. Your confidence is there. And it's when you feel like everyone's like edgy and nervous and you're like,
yes.
I don't know what's happening.
This is You Don't Mess With the Zohan.
Sorry, I should have.
I'm jumping around a lot. Adam, I heard his sets are like the best. They're just really loose.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because, you know, with Adam, everybody gets this idea that it's like so loose and chill and
they're watching,
you know, ad-libby and whatever.
Uh-huh.
But it's not. Like, Adam is and has created what he created because he's such a professional.
Hmm.
And he's kind of a perfectionist.
Oh, interesting.
And
well, that was
there wasn't a lot of improv. Like, those jokes were written.
Really?
Really. I think because it was controversial in a lot of ways. You're talking about Israeli and Palestinians.
Well,
they were like, They really thought about those jokes.
I bet. I rewatched it recently, and it is kind of like way ahead of its... I don't think anyone's tried to do anything like that since. All the jokes are about the Jews and the Israelis and the Palestinians getting along. You play a Palestinian.
Yeah.
In fact, you are Jewish. How did you get that accent down? Because you do a very strong accent in the movie. That's another... Was that... So did you have a coach?
I did. I had a... he's an actor too, amazing. His name was Waleed Zuader. And he really worked.
Because your parents were, this is going to sound really naive, ignorant, but was it anywhere close to a Moroccan accent that you were familiar with?
No. It's such a different thing. Like, I didn't know Arabic at all. I heard it. My grandparents could speak a dialect from Morocco. You know, when you're speaking French, there's nothing familiar with like French and Arabic. Mm. But I did really tune into that sort of Moroccan, like the character Delia. I really tuned into like the hair and the gold and the energy of where I come from. Yeah. That the whole thing.
There's a very very outgoing. They put a lot out.
Yes, exactly.
And a warmth.
For sure. And it's, you know, it was such a beautiful experience working with Waleed, because we would get into these personal conversations, and I'd be like, my God, we have, like, if he talked about his grandmother and I talked about mine, so similar. Do you know, like, there's a cultural thing that's there.
Well, that's what's kind of nice about the movie, even though it's this big comedy and like silly, whatever, but there is the message behind it is kind of like, there's way more similarities between these two groups of people.
Way more than not.
And very like ones that you would kind of take for granted, but like the type of women they're attracted to, the jokes that they laugh at.
Everything. The food, the way, everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember we would have these lunches with, you know, the Palestinian actors, like authentically Palestinian, the Israeli actors. And we would have these lunches, and we were like, well, there you have it. We have figured out world peace. It's right
it's
here.
That easy. Hey, Yasser Arafat, check it out.
Check this out. Do, 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 do,
for all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
Do you remember why you got into acting? Was it always just something you enjoyed doing? Did somebody look at you and say, you should be doing this?
A little bit. When I was a kid, like 4, 5, 6, you know, we would go to these family things, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, or whatever. Yeah. And I would be there dancing. Oh, yeah, huge family.
Yeah.
dancing, you know, circle around me.
Stage fright. Yeah.
Go figure. Yeah, as a kid, I was such a ham.
Yeah, I bet.
And apparently anxiety kicked in somewhere along the lines, but so there was always that, and, you know, being sort of approached like to do commercials and this, that, the other. And I always, when I was a little girl, I was like, I want to be an actress and a singer and a dancer and an artist. And I, like, it was anything to do with the arts.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was 7, I did my first play, and it was that experience that changed it for me. Like, I was like, oh, that's it. This is it.
Was it like a kid's play or
no? Real, it was a real play.
Not real play. Not to say that kids, but for all the kids right. listening, no,
yeah, sorry.
Child thespians.
I meant like, it's a very. It was a not a children's play, yeah. though. I played the baby ghost. It was a drama,
uh-huh.
and
about a whole family of ghosts.
And I, that sense of community really got me.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I was totally. In.
My mom was an actress, and so we would. My
oh,
brothers
I didn't
and I
know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
My brothers and I would do occasionally if they needed like a kid in her, she was part of a workshop. We would play one of the like child parts.
That's
and,
amazing.
Yeah, but I remember, I wasn't crazy about acting then, but I liked the. A lot of the actors, the adults, I remember the adults being very playful,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, very like kind of fun to be around.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was a great atmosphere.
It was a great atmosphere.
Yeah. So then you start doing it professionally. And is that because, and those are commercials mostly? Those are.
Yeah.
In Toronto.
In Toronto. Uh-huh. I really, I went to high school for the performing arts.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In 10th grade. There was, so the equivalent, I guess, of Nickelodeon in Canada, it was called YTV. And they had this writing competition. Yeah. And the winner would have their show produced and mm-hmm. made. So they used our high school because it was like a new, beautiful
yeah,
high school.
Yeah.
And then we got to audition for for this show.
Fun.
And speaking of Degrassi,
uh-huh.
the one of the girls in my class, she was like blonde and gorgeous, and she was on Degrassi, and it was like such a big deal.
Oh yeah, that's a huge show.
It was huge.
Yeah,
it was like a big deal. So we're auditioning, and the role was for Roxanne Donovan, who was the like, she was like the high school bitch and like the popular girl.
I can see that.
Like, so everybody was like, well. Obviously, Sarah, right? I was like, of course, Sarah. Yeah. I was like, course, duh.
Yeah.
And then, like, whatever, I auditioned and I got it.
Oh, no kidding.
Holy moly. And then that literally started everything.
That's like, crazy that the first professional role you played was a, like, bitchy.
Yeah.
Girl. That's shocking.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's so funny. And then
shows your range.
And I got an agent and all those things.
That, yeah.
And so at this point, you know, I'm 16. And then started from like ground zero, like uh-huh. one-liners, commercials. Sure.
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on in Toronto,
there's
right?
There's a lot.
So then why and when did you move to Vancouver, and why not move to LA if you're going to move that far west?
Being Canadian, trying to get to the States
is a dumb question.
Hell on wheels.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
There was a lot of work in Vancouver. And you know,
that's true. There was a ton
happening.
Yeah.
Worked a bunch out there, and then finally got my working visa. And I always thought I'd be New York based. So
I went
to New York. There were so many things. You know, I left Canada sort of deeply frustrated because it really felt like at the time I was always going to play the friend.
Mm.
Like there was looking the way I looked.
Is that because you were brunette?
Yeah, it almost felt like Canada didn't know what to do with me in a weird way, even though it is so multicultural.
Uh-huh.
And when I came out to LA, it was like the moment I came to LA, I never had a second job again.
Wow.
Like,
wow. Up until that point, you had been waiting tables.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. But our paths never really crossed. I met occasionally. I think we met at some point between waiting, right? We didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't meet on waiting.
No.
No. Because I knew you when by the time we got to do that movie.
For sure.
I'm glad you can't remember. That was 15 years ago. There were a lot of people in that movie.
I mean.
Ryan Reynolds, Anna Faris, Dane Cook, the list goes on.
Luis Guzman.
Guzman. I hope this podcast sticks around long enough that I get to have every one of them on the show.
That would be so amazing.
We shot that in New Orleans. It was the first time I had ever been in New Orleans. Yeah. What was your experience like on that? What are your memories of
Waiting?
Waiting, yeah.
Oh, my God. I just remember, yeah, like going to New Orleans, and it was just like amazing.
Had you been before?
No. That was my first also. Mm-hmm. And this like great cast and playing like Kyla, the like lesbian bartender.
Yeah, he played a surly lesbian bartender.
Again. With Jordan Ladd. Yes. Amazing.
Yes.
It was so random and hilarious. And I remember too, because I think I had auditioned for Anna's part originally.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever, they put it all together and da da da, and yeah, they were like, you know, come and play this part. And I remember doing that.
Talia.
Stupid.
Which one?
The what? Music video.
Oh, and yeah. I think the music video is the best part of that movie. That music video is really funny.
I mean,
it's like,
it was so funny. All of it was just so crazy. And I just remember having like great times with all you guys.
I know. We had so much. Again, I'm going to sound like so irresponsible, but I have regrets about that movie only because, I don't know if regret's the right word. We went out almost every night. I went out almost. Again, I'm going to sound like this is going to be
good. Justin likes to have fun.
I like to have fun. I've changed. But it was New Orleans, first time in New Orleans, and this like young, we were all kind of the same age. And,
yeah.
Oh, it was so fucking fun. We'd go out all the time. But we justified it because the movie took place over the course of, it was set during one day,
yes,
really, after the night of a big party.
Yes.
So we all kind of justified going out because like, well, our characters would be hungover. You know? Like, we're all like, well, we're like method actors.
That was amazing. Do you know how many comments I get?
Oh yeah,
of like, just watched Waiting, didn't know you were in Waiting.
Yeah,
like yeah. God, it's so fun. It's,
I get
so
it a lot
fun
too, and I get it from waiters oftentimes.
You
and I'm always a little nervous there, and they always say it like they're slight, not that they're embarrassed about it, but like they're in some sort of club because they know them. They're like, hey, yeah, I know you're from Waiting.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, we love that movie. And I'll look back at the kitchen staff and they're all like, yeah, what's up? But there's always a part of me that's like, how much do they relate to this movie? Because it's really disgusting, a lot of it.
It's really.
Yeah, there's a running gag where like they put things in people's food. And so whenever I hear like pubes and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Not just thin, not like, no, not spices.
And like, horking.
I should have clarified.
Like, terrible.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a movie that you definitely couldn't. And I was just doing an interview for this gay publication, and they brought up how much has changed since then in terms of what is acceptable and is deemed, you know, offensive. And I forgot that the end of that movie ends, the big, like, payoff to the whole John Francis Daly character is he calls everyone, or at least Ryan Reynolds' character, he calls him a fag.
Oh God.
Yeah. And I had forgotten that. And I think there's some dated stuff in that movie that they wouldn't be able to do now, for good reasons.
For
this guy was telling me all about, you know, all the problematic areas of Waiting now. And I'm like, yeah, it's true. We probably couldn't make that.
Exactly. I mean, but you know what's so interesting though? I get it. And everything is so, you know, PC now. And but it's like to the point of like fear. There's fear everywhere.
Yes,
people are afraid. Like, people are just scared. And it's like it has to go so extreme. It has to go one way in order to find it, the balance.
Right.
Right.
Because there's so many good. I mean, there's so many, you know.
It's incredible. Yeah. Sort of. And what's happening, there's a real movement to important change.
Yeah.
But I got to say, I feel so lucky that we came up at a time that we did and that we didn't have social media time.
I know.
Do you know, like all the way, even through Entourage, we didn't have Instagram when we were doing Entourage.
You know, I'm thinking about some of those experiences that we had, and I don't know how present I would have been. I don't know that I, not to say going out and drinking every night is like, you know, the best way to experience the world, but like even doing, you know, going to the Isle of Pop, we were so present, you know,
so
even on
present
set,
to the experience. It was like, it was us. We had our thing. It was like a month and a half, and it's like etched into our hearts and memories forever.
I know. I wonder how much of it would have been on the thing.
I agree.
You, although I have to say, you are very responsible with it, and I like
I really appreciate that.
You are, and you kind of deliver these messages, these very warm, encouraging messages, like a lot of like Shabbat Shalom type stuff. How does it fit into your life, that social media?
You know, at the beginning of this, before we said the issues with social media,
yeah,
I think that straight up, I wish it didn't exist.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I think it's killing our future generation. I think there's a lot more wrong than good, actually.
Me too.
I really do.
Yeah.
I think in a business sense, awesome, great.
Right.
It took me a really long time to jump on board. And it was that thing. It was like jump in and swim or don't.
I know.
But
yeah.
At a certain point, like it's just not even an option anymore.
I know.
Like if you're on a show, you're on a movie, it's in your fucking contract.
It's crazy.
They're sending you artwork to post at this time.
Yeah. That's how it's done. Yeah.
So that's how it's done. So I had to really come to terms with, okay, I need to raise my numbers. And at the same time, I can't feel compromised while doing it.
It still is you. It's a part of you that you're putting out there.
Yeah, it's a part of you that you're putting out there. And I feel like there's so many aspects of this business where you've sacrificed so much that you're like, okay, this is me. This is my brand. So if we are entertainers, I like to think of ourselves as light bringers. We bring light to the world, whether it's, you know, whether the films we do make people laugh, make people cry, we tell stories, we tell important stories, you know, all of those things. It was like, okay, then I want to be a light. Then I want this social media thing to be a bring awareness for charities that are important to me, promote the projects. And then I just want to share what resonates deeply to me. Like, there's so many, like, political things that I just, like, I can't anymore. Like, I just get saturated where I'm like, no, that's not what I want to do. Unless it's really, truly authentic to me. I guess that's the thing. I want to be authentic
as
often as possible.
Yeah. Well, mission accomplished. It's really nice to follow you, and everyone should follow you. Is it M. Shriki? E. Shriki.
Yeah.
What's the most commonly mispronounced version of your name? Because I think before I met you, I thought of you as Creekwee or Emmanuel Creekwee.
Creekwee. I don't even know what Kwai. Like, I often get Emmanuel.
I also wish people could have seen that. Just gonna let it go into space. Emmanuel's enough,
this
right?
This is enough. Yeah, there's not a lot of us.
But it is. But now I know that it's pronounced Shriki. No, it's Shriki, right? It's Shriki. There was a like 2% of me that wasn't positive. After talking about how well I know you.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
How do you get entourage? And is that the thing that kind of broke you? Like,
no, but yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, 100%. There was absolutely life before entourage and life after entourage.
That was like 2006?
Yeah. Yeah. Ish.
Yeah. You play Sloane, you play Eve's lover.
Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a role that at first was more minimal than it became, right? It became a very integral part of the show.
Yeah, it was this crazy slow burn. You know, originally...
Sloane burn.
Sloane burn. Nice. So is such a Justinism. Sloane burn. I had auditioned, and it was a 3-episode arc.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And I joined, you know, whatever, second season. So imagine, I did the whole series plus a movie...
Oh, wow.
Which was just this sort of epic, the gift that kept on giving. But it was such a cool story because when I auditioned, you know, originally the role was this like very sort of blonde, waspy Beverly Hills girl.
It was supposed to be the girl you went to school with, the Degrassi girl.
Yeah, exactly.
You thought she was
always,
gonna get it.
It always comes back to that. So was Snow Day, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow type. That was,
no
I remember, kidding. I remember the breakdown. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
oh, wow.
That's again, like when I say like being here in the States really gave me a different opportunity. Like people took those chances. And it's funny because now we talk about diversity
and inclusion,
but
yeah.
It's not. It was like, for me, it just felt like the girl. She just wasn't blonde. Like
exactly.
Sloane was just like a girl. It wasn't like diversity. It was just
that's true.
Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Were you cast as so they weren't even looking for it. I mean, you said about the other role, they were looking for a blonde girl.
Yeah.
So oftentimes you get these roles. Is it different now? Is it now like you get roles that are looking for some, I wouldn't even know how to explain your ethnicity.
I don't mean neither. I'm
a Moroccan, Jewish, French, Canadian.
Yeah. Like,
that type.
That type. Brunette, olive skin.
Yeah.
I don't even know. So long story short.
But Entourage, you sign up for three
episodes. I go and audition and I remember that they brought me back to read with Kevin. And before the audition, Kevin Connolly, and before the audition, it asked my agents, like, can I speak to her? So I was getting mixed messages from everywhere. Like, she wasn't funny enough. Or, like,
what? Based on the audition?
Yeah.
Were they funny signs?
No, it wasn't that at all.
Yeah.
The girl.
Yeah.
So Kevin calls me and he's like, listen, whatever you heard, disregard that. Do exactly what you did.
That's cool.
She was amazing. And then didn't hear for weeks. And I remember in the last hour, they ended up auditioning Rachel Lee Cook. And it looked like they were going to go that
she's
way.
She's all that.
She's all that.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were going to go that way.
Oh, no
And
kidding.
Then Kev was like, no, I want her. Huh. I want M. And Doug was like a really big
Doug
on
Ellen.
My side as well. And so Kevin called me with the offer.
Oh,
like,
hey, wow.
Because, you know, we had so many friends in common. And he was like, hey, that's Kevin Connolly. So, listen, I just wanted to let you know that, you got the offer. And it was interesting because he had said to me, listen, it is 3 episodes for now. He said, but there's a real possibility that this could turn into more.
It's funny. They often say that, and it's like never the case.
This was like unbelievable. Game changer.
Did he call Rachel Lee Cook to let her down? Rachel, it's Kevin. She... And she's great. She would have been great, but you brought something to it that was completely different. I mean, that's, and I like that they started writing more for you. I mean, they wrote to you, to your strengths, and not, you weren't just like the girl on the show.
You
had a lot to do. It's funny, I was about to mention, I think this is the fourth podcast I've done where I've mentioned Sarah Pantera. But is that how you know Pantera, Sarah? Is that how you know Kevin? Just from going out?
From going out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole
Lance
crew.
Bass and,
that's not how that I he's met in the, Lance, but yeah. No, but that whole crew, Leo and Toby and like that whole crew was from going out back in the day.
Yeah.
Except that I never knew Kev.
Oh, weird. You knew all the other members of the
all his other friends,
the entourage,
the wolf pack.
Yeah,
I knew them all, but I never knew Kev.
Huh? Weird.
Yeah. So bizarre.
Ethan Suplee and
all of them,
Lucas Haas and those guys.
Yeah.
So now you're on the show. Now does it feel like? At what point does it feel like this is going to be a regular thing? Now I'm going to be on this for a while.
It never did.
Oh, it was always.
It was like every year was like. You know, and we just sort of started to clue in. And then it suddenly, Jay, it was sort of one of those things where it was like, I don't think any of us realized how huge it was until after.
Huh.
If that makes sense. Like,
yeah, you look back at it and like, that was, I guess, kind of
like really significant.
Yeah.
But in the moment, it was what it was. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just sort of one of those things. And,
well, also you're shooting around, you're living in LA,
at
these like locations, many of whom you've probably gone to socially. And
for sure.
Yeah. That's why the show worked, was because it was
a love letter to LA.
It was a real guilty pleasure for me because I was like, these are things that I shouldn't want to go home and watch.
You know? Right.
But it was done so well. Everybody was the acting was so good. And it was so fun to watch. Do you keep in touch with all those guys? Or you?
I keep in touch, especially with Kev and with Jerry.
Yeah. Jerry Ferrara.
Yeah.
Do you have regrets? I wonder this because you strike me as somebody who has dealt with things in a very healthy way. You mentioned you had a really awful year. Mm-hmm. You don't strike me as somebody who holds on to things.
I try not to.
Yeah.
I mean, but I definitely struggle with it.
You do.
For sure. I think the struggles are, I think when you, especially you're going through a dark time or a hard time, like, you know what, Jay? I'm pretty certain that when I'm older, I'll look back on these days and wish that I didn't spend so much time agonizing, so much time.
God, I can't believe you do.
Living with, a certain amount of anxiety where, at different times it's been like debilitating, like where I don't see people or like where I won't go out or that I'm, somewhat self-destructive, smoking way too much, doing things that
weed
are not.
Weed or cigarettes?
Both.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, but I think that that's my journey.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, I think it ebbs and flows, and I think there are good days, there are bad days, there are good weeks, there are bad weeks, and there are some years that really stick out as like, whoa, and that last year was one of those. Last year was a fucking whoa.
Well, I want to know about it, but I guess the most important part of it is that you're coming out of it now. Yeah.
Yeah,
good.
And I think that all that is... it's perfectly imperfect. It's part of the transition. It's part of the transformation.
Well, you're somebody who, as long as I've known you, you've had tragedy in their lives. And I got to know you and I really admired you for the way you dealt with those things in your life. The death of your mother at 16. And then the last time I saw you was not long after your dad had died. And again, I was so struck by how you were able to process that. And I'm sure it's something you're still processing. And, it's weird to compliment somebody on something like that. But I really admired your strength.
So lovely, Jay. I remember you were such a good friend to me. I remember after, too, when my dad was sick.
Yeah.
And you would send me, like, these amazing texts. Do you remember those texts that you would send me, like, checking in?
Yeah, he was sick for a while.
He was sick for a while.
Yeah.
And you just sent me, and I get strength from all of that. It's not – I get –
Do you have a core group of friends that...
I do.
And they're kind of like, they must be like your family.
100%. You know, I think at a certain point, as you well know, I think as we get older, it becomes less about quantity and more about quality.
Totally. Yeah, and in the time. I mean, that's one of the reasons this show is called Life is Short. I like the reminder.
I love that. And
the time has become so much more precious. It's funny, I look back, it's the only regrets that I do have, and I guess they are regrets, is some of the relationships or some of the nights out where I feel like I sort of wish I had sat with myself a little bit more and appreciated what was happening to me instead of chasing these relationships and stuff. These are really quick. What is your most commonly used emoji?
Kissy face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been using that a lot lately.
Kissy face or the with one the with the girl that is like...
Oi, Gewalt.
Yes.
For our Jewish listeners, it's Oi, Gewalt. Yeah, that's funny. The kissy face comes in handy.
Yeah.
The one with the heart coming out.
Yeah, so cute.
If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Basketball.
Oh, you like basketball?
Yeah.
Have you ever played?
A little bit. No, please.
I don't know.
I mean, I love it. Yeah. I played like, you know.
Oh, now I know you haven't when you just did that.
I played, you know, like in the neighborhood. No, but I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life.
When you get really snacky,
wink, wink.
Wink, wink. I'm drawing a blank on snacky. Well, it used to be like Nutella. Uh-huh. It's not at all anymore. I would have to say snacky chips.
Okay.
Salt and vinegar.
Salt and vinegar potato chips.
Oh, hell
yeah. You just
yeah.
run through a bag.
Oh.
That was so like sexual. Oh, don't get me started. I totally get it. What's your favorite movie of all time, if you have one?
I'll give you top three.
Yeah, good.
Shawshank Redemption. Jacob's Ladder.
Andy Dufresne was my friend. The best. Friend. I love the way he says friend.
Oh, God. You always say the best.
Andy Dufresne. It's not a great one,
best
but.
Best things.
And Andy Dufresne was my friend. Friend. I'm workshopping.
So good. And one of my earliest memories that like struck me in my heart that I like died over for a week straight, couldn't stop crying, The Mask. Do you remember The Mask with Cher?
Oh, my God. It's so funny. I thought you were talking about the Jim Carrey movie.
Do you remember like, The Mask?
All righty then.
With Cher and that
Yes, Eric Stoltz.
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
I just remember being so young and so deeply affected by that.
Yeah. Other than L.A., where would you most want to live?
Somewhere in Europe. I don't know. Probably Paris.
Okay. I like the way you said that. It was a very Parisian way to say that. Probably Paris. London. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met.
Gandhi.
Do you think about the other side? You see, you're a very spiritual person.
I think about the other side. I struggle with it still.
You do.
I don't have a peaceful relationship with death yet. But I really struggle with that.
Yeah.
It actually really does scare me. I think it's not so much a regret question, but Jay, like something so real that I think about all the time is like this feeling of like, I need to live life to the fullest. And so I guess when I don't feel like I'm doing that, that's a regret.
Right. And do you have you have anger about it?
I get anxiety about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you know how quickly it can go. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. That got. So three people.
Okay. So Gandhi, I would say.
Which is nice at dinner because he probably won't eat a lot.
Yeah, he'll be fasting.
Yes.
I would say, wait, dead or alive? Oh, you know, I would have loved to have Nelson Mandela. And I would say. One, you know what? Like a singer, like either
the Baha Men or a Baha Man.
No, you know who?
Who?
Fucking Jim Morrison.
Oh, whoa. That's a hell of a dinner. Whoa. Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah, you got to keep the booze away from
it. Crazy. Booze and drugs, stay away. Yes. That would be this a is get through dinner. Crazy dinner. Yes.
Yeah. That would be a crazy dinner. I want to see that show.
And me.
Yeah, the reality show. We'll pitch it to Bravo. Who was your favorite Muppet? Or were you a big Muppet girl growing up?
A little bit.
Yeah, but not enough to be like...
I think... Miss Piggy.
Uh-huh. The entertainer.
She's so cute.
Yeah. She's
cute. She was so cute.
There are cuter Muppets.
There are. I mean, Kermit was cute too, but no.
I would say Gonzo's cuter.
Oh, yeah.
But she was like,
the cookie one.
Oh, Cookie Monster.
Yeah. You know who actually my favorite? It's not a Muppet, but you'll know this. My fave was Snuffleupagus.
Oh,
from
Sesame
Street.
Of course, yeah. I like for people listening you to the eyes. I love those eyes. Yeah. Yeah. You yeah. And it's you have this is a weird comment. You have Snuffleupagus eyes.
The long lashes.
But not the toed. Not Snuffleupagus right. Toed. It was also so frustrating. Remember, it was like, he's right there. You just missed him.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember being a kid and being like, fuck, if you had come seconds earlier. It was so frustrating. If you could have either super x-ray vision or super hearing, which would you choose?
Super x-ray, super hearing. Super hearing.
If you had to be one age for the rest of your life, physically, which would you pick?
41.
Wow, great. I'll be that in... I was that a month ago. I turned that. how do you get out of this? You are so sweet. You are so kind to people. What do you do when you get pissed off? Do you ever run into people and you think, oh, fuck, I don't want to talk to them.
Oh, God,
I have to lie and get out of this social situation. What do you... I mean, with guys and stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm a master deflector.
Ah.
I can deflect.
Oh, yeah?
Like, easy. And if somebody's hitting on me and I'm like, oh, God, how do I get myself out of this? I can just flip it.
I can flip it. Okay, you're like Benicio del Toro. I flip it for real. Let's say you're in line at a coffee shop and some guy is just giving you, and he's like, hey, Em, you kind of know him. You don't want to talk to him. And he's like, oh, I wish I could stay and chit-chat, but, you know, I got to run. And then he doubles back and he goes, you know what? Fuck that other thing. I got a solid half hour. Let's sit down and talk. What do you do? And you've already said, oh, too bad. It'd be nice to fake. You'd be nice to hang out.
Oh, I was already fake?
Yeah, you were already like, not fake, but like, oh, too bad you have to go.
Knowing me, I would be like, oh, my God. You know what? I would have loved to, but the truth is I can't right now.
Why?
Because I actually do have to go.
Oh, you do? I thought you, because you had said.
I know. I'm so sorry.
What are you doing? Where are you going? I'll go with you.
No.
Oh, God. I'm so glad it wasn't something you've said to me in the past. Like, wait a minute. You told me that you had a concert you forgot about. Beatles or Stones?
Stones.
Really?
I don't know. About
no, no,
that,
no, no, no wrong answers.
No, I don't know.
I'm not challenging it.
No, I don't think so. But just when you said that, I was like, oh, actually, do I mean that? No, I guess Beatles.
You listen to a lot of like hip hop that I always feel like really left out. When you know all the words and you move really well. I'm just thinking about the last time we hung out, and I was like, oh, cool. Like, I like it. I like the vibes, but it's what would this is? I hate to end on a morbid note, but there's a theme. What would you want your epitaph to read? Do you want to be buried?
I'd rather be cremated,
uh-huh.
I think, that I was a wildly brilliant light.
Mm. Well, I would second that. I would agree with that. I hope I don't see that, because that would mean that
I
was still alive. And I wanted today's Mother's Day, and it must be weird for you. It must be a hard day.
It's not any more funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wish your mom, I think she'd be really, really like who you became.
Oh,
I think she'd really
Jay, love, you make me cry.
No, it's true. You're one
Thank
of the
you,
kindest. You are a light. And I'm so grateful to know you and to be a pal. And
great fact at you.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my God. I love you so
love
much.
You
and I'm so happy that we got this time.
Me too.
And we're going to have more.
I know. We should start recording this, in fact. Every time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, oh, man.
Well, that,
that happened.
That just happened.
Yeah. I wish it were still happening because she's just, I just really am fond of her.
You sure are. And it's pretty obvious.
Oh, wait, in a bad,
not in a weird way. You know what's funny? We were, Justin and I, on the way to the studio to do the interview, we stopped off for a massage.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds very romantic. We did like a couple's massage.
Well, we didn't massage each other.
No, but we were right. It's like when you go with your significant other to get a massage, you kind of, have you ever done that?
Yes.
You lie right next to them and they, so it's like tandem massage. And that's kind of what we did. We were right next to each other and they're like massaging us.
Yeah, I've done that a few times. I feel a little, I know on The Bachelor, they're always like, let's have a romantic couples massage. Yeah. I don't know, but it's weird. It's like
it's a very personal thing.
It's a very personal thing, but not with your partner. You're being touched by strangers.
It is weird.
It's weird.
In this case, I'm glad we did it only because, well, two reasons. One, because it felt amazing. And but two, your post-massage energy worked perfectly with her energy, which is, I would say, always post-massage. She has her normal energy is post-massage energy.
Yeah, I have that energy for like maybe 30 to 40 minutes afterwards.
Oh, by the end of the interview, you were like all high strung and crazy. Like,
I miss you so much. Do you remember the time? You're right. You're totally right.
She has this very calm.
Jay?
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Was that a good Emmanuel Shrieky?
It's pretty good.
She has such good energy. And she has such a calm, I hate when people say this, but like a vibe. She's such like a cool, like mellow, comfortable vibe. So she's so nice to be around.
I think that word is overused to describe people. And I overuse it, the energy, vibe. I usually do it in a jokey way, but I think it's overused because most people don't have a clear energy or vibe. Yeah. Hers is so inviting and all good things, like enveloping. It like, she like envelops you with this energy.
She has good vibes. Good energy.
Energy. Good vibe. Like beyond good, just like, it's kind of special.
It's like therapeutic. You feel like you're getting a personality massage when you're around her because it's like she makes you feel so comfortable.
Like you've had a treatment, like an energy treatment just by hanging out with her, you know? And I remember one of the most remarkable things about her, given her like warm, beautiful energy, is that she went through such, and we don't get that into it, but I remember really being stunned by that news about her parents'
death. Me too.
When I first met her, her dad was still alive, and she was so close with him. I mean, and the fact that he then got sick and passed away at an early age, but her mom died at a very early age, and to have contended with that when she was a teenager and we've talked about this before, people's resilience and how I really admire that, you know, we're facing our own parents are fortunately still alive, but I know we both think a lot about them not being alive and how we would handle that.
Well, I mean, to that end, she said, which I really thought was honest and I could very much relate to it when she said that she doesn't have a peaceful relationship with death yet. She said that. And I thought not only was that honest and something I'm sure a lot of people could relate to, but there's something really hopeful about it too, saying I don't have it yet, but I'm still working on it, and I'm admitting that you're scared about it, but then also saying, kind of alluding to the fact that one day you want not to be scared of it, and it's a process. And I you know, of all the guests we've had who have talked about death and the afterlife, I found her take on that the most similar to how I am and how kind of I aspire to be.
Like, you know? Hopeful,
but I can admit that I'm scared.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she was, she has such, because of how she presents herself and how, you know, wonderful, warm and calm, and all the things we said she is, and the things that I think people can hear she is. I mean, that's not an act. Like, that is her. I was very surprised when she pushed back a little bit at, I just assumed she had a wonderful childhood.
Right. When she said her mom had a temper, that surprised me. Because I can't imagine her getting, I mean, I'm of course she does. Everyone gets mad. Everyone has a temper. But can you imagine Emmanuel getting like mad at someone, no. or like yelling at someone. She has
no.
I feel like her way of dealing with frustration or anger is, if I had to guess, is probably very subdued and measured. And
okay,
yeah, let's talk about this. You know,
it was almost like she was born in such a peaceful environment. Like, you know, you hear stories about they tell people, mothers, about water birth, like giving a water birth, because the idea is the baby gets born into this, there's a calming transition, you know, mm-hmm. from the amniotic fluid life that they lived into another water. Uh-huh. So it's not, they're not coming out into the fact that light and like,
yeah.
you're like, here he is, like a bunch of like weird big people like cutting your yeah. tubes. And it's a more calming introduction to the world. She strikes me as like her first week was just in this, in the, she was born into in like in some yurt in
right.
with like,
you people. Picture her parents wearing like just
playing
like,
pan flutes,
like drapery, drapey clothing,
yeah.
and like dancing together, yeah. and
like a midwife playing a sitar,
yeah.
you know, like with like
yeah, you're like positively stereotyping her,
yeah, yeah.
You're like, she seems like she was from a grave,
well, yeah. And again, as it turns, so it,
and nothing's perfect,
exactly.
So then it's almost like more. It says more about her and her resilience that she was able to deal with that and process it and come out the other side being as kind and gentle mm-hmm. as she is, I think says a lot
pretty
about
remarkable.
Her. Yeah. You guys talked, you've talked quite a bit on the show about the movie Waiting and mm-hmm. And your memories. Well, because you've had, you know, a lot of positive memories from it. But
yeah.
but you tell, throughout the course of this interview, you tell so many boozy stories.
I
it's
know.
Like, you talk about Patriotville, the like working with her on that movie in South Carolina. You talk about being hungover on Broadway. You talk about your fun in New Orleans doing Waiting.
God.
You're like, it was a lot. I kind of hope that
I'm painting a very,
my grandmom doesn't figure out how to listen to the show.
How
to stream the show.
I'm painting a, yeah, I know.
It's, you're like Orson Welles. You're like, but you actually weren't. I mean, I can attest to the fact
like
that
Tom Sizemore.
You definitely like to go out, but you like you drunk or like you partying is relatively speaking very tame. Like
yeah,
your personality, you're one of those drinkers who like you get more up and you like meeting people and you occasionally like bussing tables at restaurants. But you're basically you. You're just like you with more energy.
Yeah, we have.
You don't change when you're drinking.
The reason that I've really like changed that kind of behavior is because physically my body can't handle it. The next day, I still have fun when I drink, but the next day is lost for me. And I hate, as you know, I hate wasting any time in life because the days have gotten more precious. The idea of wasting one because like I drank too much, and to what end? Like, so anyway, I don't really do that anymore. But back then, my body could process it, and so I could be a little drunk, have fun, and the next day I was able to function.
Oh my God! Remember how easy it was? Oh. I remember being in college and going out drinking, and then the next morning having to go to the football game because I was in an a cappella group, as you all know, and we would go to the football games, the tailgates before the football games that started at like 9 a.m. and the school contracted us to go around to these different groups of people partying, tailgating, and like
shut up,
yeah, and sing for them,
get out of here,
most of whom these people were like, ugh, God, these, like, the Colgate 13 is here.
Oh, my it was annoying, God.
But, and we knew it was annoying, but we had to do it because we had this contract with the school. So there was always
God.
An element of,
I
like,
I didn't know that.
Sorry, guys, but, like, this, we'll only do two songs. And but we couldn't say that because we wanted to represent.
What songs would you serenade them
with? It was like, goodbye, my Coney Island,
get out
babe.
Of here.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. But anyway, my only point in saying this is I would go out the night before and drink, and then the next morning at like 8:30 have to wake up and like have a couple beers. Nothing had happened,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Your body just recovers so easily back then.
Mr. Sandman, yes. Enjoy the game, guys.
I remember feeling so bad.
Did you wear outfits, like little barbershop?
Yes, we wore jeans and white button-down shirts and Colgate belts. That was our outfit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Mamma mia.
Oh, boy. We'll cut all that out. You call watching Entourage a guilty pleasure. You refer to it as a guilty pleasure. Mm. And I was wondering if that's insulting.
It is.
I don't know, though. Well, it's does guilty pleasure imply that the pleasure is something you're not... I guess that's what it means, does, right?
The way I meant it was because... not that it's a bad... It was considered a guilty pleasure the most. It's to me because I was kind of living, not that life, but a version of right. that life. You know,
a virgin of that life.
Yeah. In fact, we had a little, there was like, we were in a little nerd. I mean,
it's to call what we had an entourage is really insulting to entourages, but, you know.
I'm not saying we had a cool entourage, right. but it was.
That show was, I think, both really good and well made, but also appealed to a more guilty thing because the content of it was like, it was a lot of it was very hedonistic. Yeah. It was like this guy like meeting girls, totally. And like partying and things that are kind of like, you know, people read about in tabloids. So I think that's the guilty part of it. And the content was guilty.
Yeah. And having seen it recently, it's like, it's very revealing. Not having seen it in like a number of years, I mean, maybe 10 years it's been since I watched Entourage. Now, considering culturally how much has changed and how the landscape is, you know, the landscape of creative content has changed to the point where, like, most of those episodes you can't do. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's, you know, the changes have been really positive but it's dated. I guess my point is, like, a lot of that stuff, the guilty stuff, it's extra guilty now when you see it through through a 2019 lens.
Sure.
They're hooking up and, like, with girls. I mean, there's a lot of that.
It was funny that she... At one point, you said that you're now on Instagram and you're like, I have 400 followers. And she thought you meant 400. We didn't know this in the moment, yes. But after the interview, I forget how it came up, she had, when you said, I have 400 followers, she assumed you meant 400,000.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up.
And she said, so in the interview, you're like, yeah, I have 400 followers. And because you had just started this Instagram page, so you literally had 400 followers. Yes. And she was like, oh, and she was like, oh, that's so cool. Congrats. That's really cool. And so she thought you were bragging about having 400,000 Instagram followers. So she must have thought it was so douchey of you. So I'm glad we were able to clear up that miscommunication afterwards. You were like, no, I don't mean 400,000. I mean 400. Me too. I would never brag about having 400,000.
Oh, my God. So you're right. In the moment, I'd be like, and not only did I brag about it, but I did it in like a humble braggy way where I was like, yeah, I only have 4. I only like.
I know. And she was like, "Congrats!"
Yeah.
Gross.
Ooh.
Isn't it so like just knowing that even in that moment she thought that you were bragging about it is so like gives you douche chills.
Yeah, I love when you call them douche chills when you see somebody wearing like. Ugh. Chills.
I thought
funny. That's a funny term.
You were doing your Morgan Freeman impression, and
Andy Dufresne,
and you and I thought for a second you would never stop doing it.
Oh, really?
You repeated it so many times. You were like,
because I was trying to work it out in my. Sometimes I do an impression, it doesn't sound right to me, and I have to like kind of find the voice. I did it a lot.
So funny, and she finally
and Andy Dufresne.
Okay.
I once had a friend.
It's actually pretty good.
My friend, Andy Dufresne.
Your face looks crazy when you're doing it.
I know. I know. It's not a good impression to do on a date.
She said she loves...
For many reasons.
She said she loves The Mask and was so moved by it emotionally. And for the record, it's called Mask, not The Mask.
She was talking about the Jim Carrey movie.
The Mask is a Jim Carrey movie. Mask is a movie with Cher and Eric Stoltz. And when she said that, it was so funny to imagine her getting moved... Like emotionally moved by Jim Carrey in The Mask.
Yes.
I'm glad that we settled that.
Yeah, that's really funny.
But that's it. I thought it was really nice to be around her and to see her again.
Yeah, really. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been.
Yeah, it's been.
Do you want to read a letter from one of our fans? One of our fans.
Fans.
I can't believe I said that.
Whoa.
Oh, can we cut that out?
No.
Oh, shit.
Michelle, don't cut that.
Oh, God. I'm like, I just gave myself douche chills.
I know. Why is that so douchey to say a fan?
Yeah, it just is. It just is.
Listen.
What? Is that your stomach?
Oh, no, I just farted.
Ew.
Sorry, Will. It won't make it to you. This is from Alex G. He says, hello, Justin and Christian. Since I was 7 or 8 years old, I'm now 26, I've been in love with video games. I had a cousin that did video game review articles for a newspaper in Wisconsin, and that was my confirmation that I could do something that made playing video games a living. When I listened to the Life is Short episode with JB Smoove, I decided to start doing my dream job. He said that you have to at least try to do something that you have passion for, and it really hit me. So I'm going to renovate my garage into an office and start live streaming and creating YouTube content while working 55 hours a week at a welding job and 20 hours a week as a youth pastor at a church. Oh my God. It'll be hard, and that he didn't say, oh my God. He's a youth pastor. It'll be hard, and that's what I've been afraid of. I know I will be good at it, though, and I realize that every year is the new shortest year of your life when you think of years as fractions of a whole.
Ooh, that's depressing.
I know, but true. Kind of good, yeah, to remind
good to
yourself.
Keep in mind.
I am going to dive in, and your podcast has sparked my passion again. Thank you, Justin.
That's really nice.
Really nice.
It's also, I remember how inspiring JB Smoove was, and so it makes sense. If anyone's going to, kickstart someone's motivation, JB Smoove is a good person to do that.
Like, I can't really take credit for that. I don't think, you know, JB.
I think Alex G. meant to write, thank you, JB. But he wrote, thank you, Justin. It was probably an autocorrect.
Thank you, JL.
Yeah.
Oh, did I say L? I meant, he was inspiring. Anybody who's that positively passionate, you know, is inspiring.
That was really nice to hear. I'm glad that JB made some difference.
Do you ever meet people and you're like, you could tell me any book recommendation, diet recommendation, and I just so respect however you're living your life, like what you've done. You seem to have just figured it out.
If Keanu Reeves told me to do just about anything, I probably would do it.
Oh my God. If he said, you know, I actually like to put leeches on my wrists in the morning for about a half an hour just to get the blood flowing. He wouldn't even need an explanation. Like, yeah, I'm going to start.
What would Keanu do? What would Kevin Bacon do?
Well,
let's not get back into that.
That's true.
Let's
not get Bacon into that.
So if you guys want to write in, we'd love to hear from you. Write in about anything. Specifically, we would love to hear how you make the most out of your lives. You can reach us at, do people say that about email? You can reach us via email. You can e-meet us. E-meet us at.
I've used it though.
You have to use it. There's no other way of saying it.
Nice to meet you.
You guys can reach us at. You can e-meet us at lifeisshort@wondery.com.
So
that's it.
Thanks, Alex G.
Thanks, Emmanuel Shariki.
MC.
EC.
Oh, yeah. EC.
Those are no.
Well, because I call her M.
Oh, okay.
And so if Alex G is Alex G, she's MC.
Got it.
MC Shrieks. That's a good name for her.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Thank you for listening to Life is Short. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and
Google.
And where else?
Anywhere you listen to podcasts.
And Wondery.com. Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long.
It's produced by me, Christian Long, and Megan Monaco.
Michelle Mish Lanz is our senior producer. Our engineer is Marcelino
Viabando. It's executive produced by Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Our theme song is performed by our friend, Harmar Superstar.
He was...
Can you do your best Bobcat Goldthwait in Police Academy impression?
No, wait, hold on. What should I say? Give me something to say.
Say, I thought I was working the afternoon shift.
Okay. I gotta try to remember it.
I thought I was working the afternoon shift, but I wasn't.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Wait, try again.
I thought I was working the afternoon shift.
Doesn't it go?
Yeah. I used to be able to do it really well. I haven't heard it in so long.
I used to think I was working the afternoon shift, but now I don't know.
I don't remember it.
It's really hard to do.
It's hard. I used to do it all the time.
I used to do it all the time. And
you sound like Harmar.
No, I don't even know.
He'd like go into a roar.
Yeah. It's a little bit like Jiminy Glick.
Cause you with that. Jiminy Glick is, I guess, and then he goes down there.
It's sort of like that.
Sometimes I think I go up here and then I go down.
Martin Short would be.
Oh my God. Martin Short would.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.